Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever you happen stance into another Truth Bomb riff. My name is Patrick Lovell, and I am joined by the great David K. Johnston of DC Report. And we are recording this on Tuesday, or I apologize, Wednesday, August 5th, 2026, at approximately 12:30 p.m. on, I already said the date. But David K., it is remarkable to speak with you on this engaging day. I want to first just introduce to the audience, for those who don't know David K., which hopefully everyone does. But David K. Johnston is a co-founder of DC Report. He is a best-selling author and investigative journalist who reported for the New York Times for 13 years. He's a specialist in economics and tax issues. He won a 2001 Pulitzer Prize, and he's a professor of practice teaching criminal justice, journalism, law, and political science at the Rochester Institute of Technology. And David K., a lot to react to at the moment. We just saw what appears to be mainstream's framing of a social democratic wave in the primaries, of course, being led out of Michigan with a narrow, narrow victory after what appears to be AIPAC's, you know, $30+ million spend. But he won nevertheless. What are your thoughts on the other side of the primaries here?
Well, I think the clear message isn't necessarily that people are embracing Zohran Mamdani politics, although he's proving to be excellent at governance in New York City, but that there's a demand for change. We have been living now for 45 years with the promise that tax cuts for the rich, reduced regulation, and a host of other actions were going to make us all prosperous. Something the Democrats ridiculed back then as trickle-down economics, and I described in my books as actually Niagara-up economics, sucking money out of the pockets of everybody and concentrating it in the pockets of the few through government policies that almost nobody understood. And in fact, I spent years, you know, digging these out of the public record and making sense of them. And the fact is that half of the American population is living in a state of economic terror, and 90% are at best treading water or a little better. People now understand that the whole idea of any loyalty to the employee by the company is gone, that the corporate America's focus is on enriching executives, directors, and shareholders, not on anything else. You know, all that money spent on stock buybacks, which were essentially illegal before Ronald Reagan's election in 1980, had not taken place. Workers at the 100 largest companies in America would have been paid, and that money was turned over to them. Workers at the 100 largest companies would have gotten about $300,000 each in additional compensation over the last 5 years. Think what a difference that would make in people's lives. So I think that people have looked around and they've seen that, you know, Donald Trump came in, I'm going to lower gas prices, I'm going to end the war in Ukraine in one day, I'm going to make this all this glamorous golden era for everyone, and they realize they've been had. There's a third of Americans who still believe his nonsense, but the numbers are dwindling. He has the worst approval rating of a second-term American president at this point since polling began. Although he says he has the greatest polling numbers ever. They're fantastic. We have the greatest economy ever. And unfortunately, there are still fools who believe this. So I think the election results show something that Richard Nixon's economic advisor, Herb Klein, said. A trend can only continue as long as it can continue. And you're now seeing a demand for real change. People haven't figured out exactly how that will work or who's going to do it, but they've had enough and they want something else.
Man, you've been in this game in the trenches as long as everyone. One of my favorite quotes is that you're regarded as Donald Trump's most hated journalist. Your work has been phenomenal, broadcast around the world. I love to watch you particularly voice a lot of your insights to Europe and so forth. And I think in the maelstrom of this incredible election sort of cycle was and is everything that's taking place with the confirmation hearings of Todd Blanche, of course, and the DOJ, and this alliance with really probably at the apex of your expertise, tax policy. What are your comments regarding this insanity by way of written confirmation to Cornyn and Tillis based on the slush fund and all of those elements involved? How do you unpack that and what's your takeaway?
Well, first, let me just note that I think from the first term when I was Donald's most hated journalist, I've now fallen all the way down to where he doesn't think about me anymore. That's just fine with me. Think for a moment about what happened here and how revealing it is of what I call the Susan Collins school of saying the right things and then doing the wrong thing. Todd Blanche is utterly unqualified morally and legally to be the Attorney General of the United States, but he's Donald's lawyer. And Blanche, in fact, in what might be regarded as a slip of the tongue, told a hearing, I'm his lawyer. Was his lawyer, he said. Todd Blanche has been running the Justice Department as Donald Trump's personal revenge machine, bringing utterly unwarranted criminal cases against Jim Comey, the former FBI director, and the Olympic athlete Hearn, who had the audacity to put his hand into the reflecting pool in Washington, something I've done, you may well have done, and that on that very day, my wife did, because we were in Washington. She just didn't get arrested as a vandal.
Wow.
On Trump's false claim that vandals had been responsible for the failed relining of that body of water. But what troubled the two lame duck Republican senators, both of whom lost in primaries after Donald turned against them and supported MAGA insurgents, Tom Tillis in North Carolina, he just quit, and then John Cornyn, the senior senator in Texas, who lost his primary, was this stunningly corrupt deal that gave Donald a $1.776 billion slush fund to direct money to the mob he sent to overthrow our government on January 6th, 5 years ago, and to give Donald Trump, his family, his businesses, and by my reading of this, anyone who was involved with them, complete immunity from tax audits up to the date of the agreements being signed. And remember, this is the agreement where Donald Trump himself said on TV, well, I'm suing myself, you know, I'm the litigant and I'm also the government. Absolutely outrageous conduct. And Todd Blanche wouldn't back away from both the slush fund and the audit immunity. Finally, when it became clear that the nomination would not get out of the Judiciary Committee, because there's one more Republican than Democrats in that committee, so he needed every vote, Blanche wrote two letters. They've been widely reported as ending the slush fund and radically reducing the audit. They're garbage. They have no legal significance whatsoever. This is political gaslighting. But it was enough for Tillis and Cornyn to, you know, as honors graduates of the Susan Collins School of say the right thing and then do the wrong thing, vote to advance Todd Blanche's nominee to be Attorney General of the United States. I don't know how well the public will understand this. This is somewhat pointy-headed legal stuff. And a lot of that will depend on how it's characterized in those very brief reports on network news, on NPR, radio, et cetera. And unfortunately, some of the reports I've heard create the misleading impression that Donald Trump's slush fund and his immunity from audits is over. It is absolutely not over by any means. And you can go to the bank on the certainty that it will be revived in the future in some fashion.
The long lens of your career, in the books that you've written, and of course in Trump 1.0, you know, you were national headlines. You were a guest of Rachel Maddow during the breaking tax revelations that would then lead to the investigations. I don't know if there was a direct corollary. It seemed to outside.
Well, I'm the one who broke the story, and she had me on as a guest.
Right. And then, of course, all the thing with Suzanne Craig and then the long form and the deep dive and the taxes. Right. You know, I'm going to put a list of your books. I was just looking off screen. I mean, like Temples of Chance, How America Incorporated Bought Out Murder Incorporated to Win Control of Casino Business, Free Lunch. And of course, really all your top, the fine print. And I'm thinking like, you know, the making of Donald Trump. You've known his career inside and out. Are you at all surprised? Are you shocked? Are you just, this is the intended, this is the consequence or maybe unintended consequences of literally everything that you've been pointing out. We're talking about a $1.76, $1.8 billion slug run for those that attacked the Capitol. In what world does this make sense? The world that you've been telling us is happening for like literally decades, David Kaye.
Well, you know, one of the things you learn early on when you do investigative reporting, and I've been a reporter now for, it'll be 60 years this year, is that sometimes you write a story and it resonates with the public, and sometimes there's just no reaction whatsoever. In the case of Donald, I've been documenting since 1988 that he is a career criminal. He is the third generation head of a four generation white collar crime family. He was business partners with and did extraordinary favors for one of the biggest cocaine traffickers in America, which is all laid out in my book, The Making of Donald Trump. And by the way, all from public records, everything I say and write about Donald, either Donald and I spoke directly, he gave testimony somewhere, or some other public record. I don't use unnamed sources with Donald. Everything is verifiable independently. And Donald is also, and I recognized this soon after meeting him, a master con artist. I mean, I've written about a lot of con artists over my career, some of whom went to jail. And nobody I have ever written about is in Donald Trump's league as a con artist. And he's been enabled in that by journalists who never let facts get in the way of a good story. Donald brilliantly played off the two New York City tabloids, the New York Post that Rupert Murdoch controls, and the New York Daily News, to create all these fictitious myths about him that, you know, he's a multi-billionaire, he's the greatest Don Juan of all times. Sadly, the failure of my former employer, the New York Times, the Washington Post, some other big news organizations that should know better, to properly scrub Trump in 2016 helped enhance his power. And Donald believes, and has as long as I've known him, that he is special, he is unique, and he alone should be president of the United States, something he said in 2011 or 12. And in 2024, he came along and said, I run the country and the whole world. Something I had been mocked for saying was his viewpoint for years, and then he said it. And if you believe you're all powerful, if you believe, as he said in his first term, I have an Article 2 that says I can do anything I want, referring to our Constitution, then you're going to behave the way that he is behaving. Bad as the slush fund and the audit exemptions are, and by the way, why would you need an exemption from an audit unless you're a tax cheat, which Donald definitely is, and I've shown that repeatedly in from his tax returns. That's only part of what's going on here. Right now, Pete Hegseth has been denying promotions to utterly, completely qualified officers who are black, brown, or female. They've been scrubbing websites of references to valorous conduct by Medal of Honor winners and Colin Powell, who became the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, all because they're not white. And now he's begun promoting dubiously qualified people into positions. And I warned way back in 2015 or 16, before Donald got to the White House, that the most significant sign that the American democracy would come to an end and we would live in a dictatorship would be promotion out of turn of officers, particularly junior officers, and denial of promotion to qualified officers in our military, which has historically been apolitical, but which is now run with a Trump loyalty test. This is a well-studied, well-understood phenomena in authoritarian takeovers. And remember, Donald Trump said that when he got back to the White House for the second term, he was asked, will you be a dictator? And he said, only for one day, only the first day. If you can name me a dictator who voluntarily gave up being a dictator and went back to being a Democratic leader, I'll give $100 to your favorite charity.
The whole thing, David, is so mixed fiction or Orwellian. We've seen the story 1,000 times, Man in the High Castle. I mean, I could give you a list of 100 movies, right? But the bottom line is, I mean, again, you're the guy on the inside. I'm talking as inside as it gets. And now we're sitting looking at on the DOJ, this huge, you know, drop down picture of Trump, a banner, right? We've got literally put his name next to, you know, one of the greatest presidents in American history on the Kennedy Center, fortunately now removed and whatever's happening there. But, you know,
covered up by a drape. So you don't see that his name is no longer there. And he also wants Mount Rushmore recut to add him as the fifth president.
Right. And so that type of stuff to me, like I grew up with a sense of humor. I love National Lampoon. I love Monty Python. I love, you know, Naked Gun. And when I look at this stuff, you know, you kind of look at it sometimes and you laugh. You think to yourself, this is like a character I've seen in comedy for my whole life. But then this 5-time deferred Dodger is sitting on top of the Pentagon, based on what you're talking about, with a war in Iran where markets are fluctuating like crazy. However, the last 2 days, markets are through the freaking roof. So one thing I would have added to the day that fascism arrives, based on what you discussed, or excuse me, described, I might have added the caveat, you know, and all of the richest people in the United States will welcome it as long as their portfolio is to the moon.
Well, I don't think all the richest people will. Because of my wife's job as the CEO for 30 years of one of the 1,000 biggest charities in the country, I have a whole circle of people where if I'm at a social event, my wife and I are the poorest people in the room, and we're not poor. And many of them are that I know are highly critical of Trump. They're deeply disturbed about the people who support Trump and support policies that are inimical to their interests, the poorly educated, as Donald calls them. But yes, there is a significant part of America, especially corporate America, that will embrace whatever he does because they have been taught, wrongly, I need to say, that the sole purpose of a corporation is to make money for the shareholders. That's a terrible false idea that has permeated America since the economist Milton Friedman wrote it in a New York Times Sunday Magazine article in 1971. It was the penultimate paragraph of his article. It's wrong, it's not law, it's not sound economics, and yet it is almost universally believed. You've got to either be a law or business professor like me or a serious student of these matters to know that that's nonsense. Many, many people will, of course, sell out for coinage. That's sort of the story of Jesus and the Last Supper. But not everybody has a price. The first journalist to get on to Donald, the late, great Wayne Barrett from The Village Voice, who had the most incredible law enforcement sources, you know, FBI agents, detectives, all trusted him deeply. Donald tried to bribe him with an apartment in Trump Tower. And Donald was clearly shocked that Wayne was completely, what are you talking about? There are many people who have a price, but many people do not. Unfortunately, the ones who don't are a minority.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Let's just hope they become more and more prevalent as this moves forward. But, you know, I'm looking at this corollary between the billionaire techno-feudal class, all things AI, data centers, war, surveillance state, you know, ICE and all of these things. How do you, again, From your standpoint, you've been looking inside this evolution for now decades. I don't think anybody can give us a more wise sort of description and understanding, but yet you've got to do it in the moment as well. How do you
Let me go back to the early 1980s when Reagan was president and he was funding a program to intercept intercontinental ballistic missiles that became called Star Wars. The general coverage of news about that at the time was that this is a complete folly. And I was a minority viewpoint on that. I said, hey, look, this is failing now, but these are simply engineering problems dealing with how fast computers react and how carefully we can calibrate gyroscopes or synthetic gyroscopes. We will eventually figure out how to stop a bullet with a bullet. And of course we have now, we know that. We have Patriot missiles and things like that. In the area of the tech bros and what's going on, we clearly have made enormous advances, and the Chinese and even bigger advances than we have, in developing something commonly called artificial intelligence. It's really just super fast, multi-issue computing. That may fundamentally revolutionize economics and culture all around the world. It has the potential to do that. It also has the potential to just be a minor improvement to economics that eliminates a lot of jobs. And we don't know. But people who think that's where the future is are pouring trillions of dollars into it. But for the spending on data centers, including equipping them with advanced computer chips, we'd be in a recession right now. The growth in the economy in the last quarter was 1.5%. That's half the average rate since the end of World War II. Now, it was higher in the previous quarter, but that's because there was a lot of advanced purchasing of things influenced by the war in Iran. We may find later in the year that the rate's higher. For the year, maybe it'll be 2.5%. That's still below the long-term average and isn't the golden era Donald has promised. But the people who think that they're going to have this enormous future economically, culturally, socially, and politically because of AI and right behind it, genetic engineering, they're not going to do anything that would prompt Donald Trump to attack them. They don't want him to cut off the permits they need to use water to cool the computers. They don't want him to interfere with financing and with licensing and sales overseas. So they're going to bow to him as a matter of both expediency and to some degree their fiduciary duty to the corporation, not to the shareholders, but your fiduciary duty is to the corporation, with one exception we don't need to get into. So you should expect there will be continued fealty to Donald. And while Donald is an appallingly ignorant man, you know, he claims to be the world's greatest expert on 22 subjects, one of which I have a global reputation on, tax policy. And he knows nothing of taxes, even though he claims to be the greatest expert in the history of the world on taxes. I've shown his from his sworn testimony that he's a complete ignoramus about taxes, except for how to cheat. People who are out there trying to grow their business, make money, enhance their position in the world, they're not going to pick a fight with Donald where there's no upside for them. They're going to go, yes, sir, sure, okay, yeah, deflect, defer, and if necessary, obey. And that will continue up until the point that the first branch of our government, the one that should be dominant, Congress, steps in and puts the brakes on Donald Trump.
Which is what should be on the ballot for the midterms. And, you know, we're looking at, for example, chaos with wildfires raging all throughout the world. Europe has been incredible. We've seen some immigration scenarios that have just boggled the mind, you know, with Spain and Morocco. We've seen wildfires. In fact, where I live, we're covered in cloud cover because of the fires in Washington, because of the nature of the jet stream. So we're three states over, and yet we may as well be next door to Washington. And these things are happening while we're doubling down on dirty fuels. We've got an EPA director, Lee Zeldin, who's basically destroyed all clean air and water regulation. You know, the state of affairs right now is so extreme to me, and yet we tend to be focusing on democratic socialists, maybe AIPAC investment. Are you concerned that there isn't a full-throated response by the Democrats, let's say, in league with Project 2025? If Project 2025 can corrupt the whole thing, can we uncorrupt it?
Well, first of all, Patrick, what is wrong with you? It's a hoax. There's no climate change or global warming. This is all a Chinese hoax. What could possibly make you think that this is happening? Fires, rising temperatures, melting glaciers? You know, it's all a hoax. Now, the problem is that the president has the bully pulpit and he gets covered no matter what crazy thing he says, too often without the context. When Donald says crazy things, the right way to do it is to say, the president said something that is fact challenged. Then you explain you're going to quote him and then you dissect it. If you just quote him and then dissect it, people focus on the first thing they read. You know, headlines and subheads and leads, the opening of an article, those are lenses to focus your mind. And journalists give too much to Donald Trump by not starting off saying, yeah, we're going to quote what the president said, but we're going to then show you that it has no factual basis. And that deeply affects how people perceive things in a very troublesome way. So journalists haven't really understood, because of the conventions of journalism, which I've never subscribed to, that Trump gets away with a lot of stuff that he shouldn't. The policies that we're pursuing are going to leave lasting damage. First of all, step back a little bit. Imagine that we had, after 9/11, 25 years ago, responded in a different way. Instead of mounting this huge army under the Powell Doctrine and going in to Afghanistan, imagine that we had taken the position that we were going to have a new Marshall Plan. We were going to help bring Afghanistan, an artificial country created by the British when they were ruling the world, into the modern era and go after the ninth century ideology of the Taliban, a word that means student. We could have put trillions of dollars into making America a pleasant, wonderful place. Instead, China, which hasn't fought a single war, I think, at all, or certainly nothing of any significance, maybe a skirmish somewhere since the communists took power. And I'm not endorsing the communists. I'm so on record about this. The Chinese stopped inviting me to come to China. They have been putting their money into, they built more than half the high-speed rail in the world. High-speed rail in the U.S. does not exist. They built more square footage of high-rise office buildings in Shanghai in the year 2005 than exist in all of New York City. They have been building water treatment plants, sewage plants. When you travel on a Chinese highway, the roads are fantastic. They don't just put the U.S. interstate system to shame. They put to shame the German Autobahn, which is wider with deeper bases than our highway system. They have been building rail for freight, airports, buying up land and water rights in Africa, and getting ready for a rising ocean that's going to sink Shanghai eventually so they can move inland. They've even been planting new forests in a very thoughtful, multi-year, methodical way to push back on the deserts that constitute much of the land of China, which is roughly the same size as the United States in square mileage. We're focused on all these other things. And Donald runs for office promising no wars. Then he starts this gratuitous war that he has no chance of winning, that he has no idea what he's doing. And what does he say when he's challenged about it? Well, we had no choice. And it's going splendidly. They're begging me, please stop the attacks. Please make a deal with us. To which the government in Tehran goes, what are you talking about? as they put out their Lego videos mocking him and making fun of him. And the bottom line here, Patrick, is very simple. We have put into office an ignorant man who has spent his whole life conning people, committing crimes and getting away with them, because he's very good at evading law enforcement. I mean, I have great respect for Donald, not only as a con artist, but as a law evader, criminal law evader, taxes and many other things. And we are being left behind by the rest of the world. The rest of the world is realigning all of its trading policies. Canada is pulling back from the United States as fast as Prime Minister Mark Carney can, including huge subsidies to a big new port project in Vancouver that will create 17,000 or so temporary construction jobs, but an equal number of permanent trade-related jobs. And that's all to increase trade with China, Japan, South Korea, Vietnam, etc. He expects that non-US trade will double by 2030, which isn't very far away. The Europeans are busy making new deals with China, with Canada, with Latin America. And we're not a party to any of this stuff because Donald has attacked and annoyed our longtime allies. And they basically said, okay, yeah, no, you got a crazy man in the White House. We don't need this. We're just going to go around you. And that's what Mexico, Canada, Brazil, Japan, China, that's what they're all doing. And the big beneficiary in this, by the way, is China. No one is benefiting more from Donald Trump's incompetence than President Xi, who is a very highly educated man, schooled in the classics. He was able to bring up the Thucydides trap from ancient Greece, which I doubt many Americans know anything about, and Donald certainly doesn't. His response made it clear he had no idea. And being deeply schooled and surrounded by people who are deeply schooled in both Marxist-Leninist theory, but also economics, business practice, logistics, engineering, they are moving into the future, and we're moving backwards.
Donald Trump said that 300 million Americans were killed by narco-terrorists. He said that terrorism or communism is 3,000 years old. I mean, that's just within the last 5 months. So I guess the question to you, David, to kind of close this out is, why does then the Heritage Foundation class put everything into it? And then on the other side of that, what's the mood of the country? And I know you're not a betting man, but you've seen patterns over this many years covering it. What do you think is the next step here, David?
Well, in Washington, starting, let me back up. In the 1960s, the mid-1960s, Ralph Nader came out of nowhere and was the most respected man in America, more respected than the Pope or the president. And it was the consumer movement he led, the movement that led to, you know, actual safety glass windshields. So if you got in a crash, you didn't have your throat slit by the windshield, or you weren't impaled on the driver's wheel mechanism. And this absolutely alarmed corporate America. A brilliant lawyer in Richmond, Virginia, named Lewis Powell, was hired by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to say, what do we do about this? And he wrote a memo. If you just go on the internet and type in Powell memo, it'll pop up and you should read it. It is essentially a plan to make sure that business runs America and everything else is brought to heel like a trained dog. Go after the unions, go after the journalists, go after the regulators, and let business do whatever it wants to do. And of course, Powell soon after that, literally months later, was appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court. The election of Donald Trump and his policies and his promoting of Project 2025, which he endorsed when it was announced and then said he knew nothing about when he was campaigning, is the logical outcome of all of this. The goal of the people who started the Heritage Foundation and who posed as conservatives, which they're not, to make America, you know, more efficient and to operate better and to improve things is, I think, at this point, very clear. It is a white Christian, perhaps tolerant of wealthy Jews and even Muslims, male dominated, focused on enriching that class of people, focused on restricting the franchise, the right to vote, and taking away social benefits. Now, I was saying 30 years ago that the Republican economic plan overall was very clear. If you just step back for a moment, it was the reason we don't have more jobs and investment and we're not better off is the rich don't have nearly enough, and therefore they're not investing as much as we would like, based on the premise, of course, that only the rich invest to create businesses, which is nonsense. So where are the Republicans seeking to get the money to get to the rich so that they'll create more jobs and make the rest of us better off? Well, you take it from children, the disabled, the elderly, the sick, and veterans, who are, by and large, people who can't fight back. Certainly everybody but the veterans can't fight back. And that's what you're seeing right now. Donald Trump said he would never touch Medicare and Medicaid, biggest cuts ever, and there are more coming. He would protect Social Security. Nope, they're going to do their best to close Social Security, which is a big goal of the Heritage Foundation people. Cutting veterans' hospitals, stopping environmental protections that have, through the acts Richard Nixon signed, the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act, significantly reduced cancer, heart disease caused by pollution, which is basically just corporations throwing out on you and me the costs of cleaning up their operations, which raises their profits and make us pay the price in terms of dying early, getting sick, not having clean air to breathe or clean water to drink. And they're romping right now, and they're doing all of that because even two lame duck veteran United States senators, Tillis and Cornyn, cannot develop the spine to stand up to Donald Trump. That's why I say that they're honors graduates of the Susan Collins, Senator Susan Collins School of say the right thing and then do the wrong thing. And these people will continue to romp until voters rise up and throw out the people who are going along with them. Some of them are Democrats, not many, but a few. And not all Republicans are going along. But we can either have a country of, by, and for the billionaires, or we can have a country that's a democracy where we work to improve everyone's lives, and we work to enhance freedom and to ennoble the human spirit to see what it can achieve, which was the promise of the Declaration of Independence and the preamble to our Constitution. But so long as many people are motivated by their racial animus, that's a key driver of what's going on by these fake conservatives who are really reactionaries, like the Heritage Foundation. So long as we have all sorts of people who believe in what's been called Republican Jesus rather than the biblical Jesus, hate the poor, deny others, never sacrifice, look out for yourself, totally at odds with what's in the New Testament and much of the Old Testament, but seriously believing, you know, we're doing God's will. And so long as we have a large segment of the public that is so poorly educated, they cannot do even the most basic, limited, critical analysis. The people Donald calls, I love the poorly educated, and they are so poorly educated, they don't understand he's insulting them. They think he's praising them because he then says, we love you. Donald doesn't love anybody, and especially himself. And if you don't love yourself, I don't know how you love anybody else. So, Patrick, I think that the elections in November are always thought it's the most important election ever. This is actually an incredibly important election. If the Democrats continue to be the minority in both the House and the Senate, that's going to be taken by Donald Trump and his minions as permission to just go much further. And remember that Donald Trump, who is supposed to be required to leave office on January 20th of 2029, has publicly said only once in his life that he made a mistake, just one time. What he said was regarding when Joe Biden was elected by the American people, he said his mistake was, quote, "I never should have left the White House," close quote. If the Republicans retain control of both chambers of commerce and maybe even just the Senate for the next 2 years, I won't be the least bit surprised if Donald pulls off a coup or installs someone as his minion and he is the de facto president. Remember, that's what Putin did. He was term limited as head of the Russian Federation. So he put in his guy who did exactly what he wanted for a couple of years, and then he came back. And now he's not leaving until he dies, unless he's overthrown. So we are in much worse shape than we were even January 20th of last year when Donald Trump took office, because there are no brakes on him. He's surrounded himself with loyal sycophants who will bring criminal charges against people with no basis, like the Olympic athlete Hearn, who was facing 10 years in prison as a vandal at the reflecting pool in Washington. And by the way, on that same day that Hearn put his hand in the water, hoping to grasp one of the little pieces of blue rubber that had come loose in the liner, my wife was there and did the same thing. Luckily, she did not get prosecuted.
They didn't know she was your wife. Otherwise, they may have.
Absolutely. If they had known it was my wife, that's exactly. She and I have talked at dinner about this several times. She would have been arrested. So the important thing is people must not give up hope. Do not let fatigue benefit Donald and his people, who are money motivated and power monger motivated, people like Stephen Miller, to do what they're doing. You've got to personally register to vote and make sure your name isn't kicked off the rolls. Get other people to vote. Go door to door for candidates who will oppose the Trump dictatorship. On election day, take the time and arrange in advance to work with a campaign where getting out the vote, will flip a seat. And don't look at this as, oh, they're democratic socialists, without understanding what that means. It still means the private sector controls the means of production. It's just safeguards to protect consumers and workers and investors and others from predators. And work to protect our democracy. And just let me leave you with one key thought, Patrick. More than a million people have died for this country, which is at its core an idea and an ideal. More than a million people. I'm the son of a 100% disabled World War II veteran who never once complained, even when I tried to goad him into it as a teenager, about what happened to him because of the war. He certainly doesn't buy into the Donald Trump idea that if you join the military and get killed, you're a sucker and a loser. Honor those people. They wanted you to be free. They wanted to see what would happen if we ennoble the human spirit. And the way you honor them is also self-interested. You protect your rights and the liberties of the people. And the way you do that right now is you get a Congress that will rein in Donald Trump, who under our Constitution is not all powerful as he claims. He is instead the errand boy of our Congress, whose duty is to do whatever Congress tells him to do, nothing more, nothing less.
Wow, David, that was incredibly powerful. I loved how you brought it back to the Powell memo. And of course, when you mentioned Friedman, you know, both of which took place in 71. And I'll also add to that Bretton Woods, interestingly enough, the whole scenario of, oil becoming gold, if you want to know the truth. And that has a lot to do with all the money aspect of it. Right. You know, in closing, I'll just say that this nation owes you a debt of gratitude for your endless work, your tireless work, your wisdom, and your just your thoughtful and your humble critique of this incredible power. But it just what I felt infused in there was the strength of what is the indelible American spirit. And so for that, I thank you for your time. Thank you for all of your work. America, check out dcreports.com. My
report,
name is Patrick.
Singular, DC Report, singular.
I can't believe I just said that. DC Report, dcreport.org. I apologize. dcreport.org. And everything that comes with it. And also check out all of David Kaye's books. I'll put a description in the link below. Mr. Johnston, thank you so much for your time. I look forward to connecting with you again.
Thanks, Patrick. Take care.
All the best.